with us. Help us to guide us in the decisions we have to make. Please be with us, this Lord, help us through this hope.
you need to hang up and call back in, period.
I can hear you now.
Eric?
Yes.
Okay. I'm hanging up, she said, and then call back in.
Who's does that?
Can y'all hear us now?
Hey, this is Adrian. I can hear you now.
Okay. We obviously...
This is him. I can hear you now.
Okay. Mark?
I just got back on. I can hear you as well.
Okay, great. So y'all didn't hear the first part at all?
I heard the regulars of ordinary business, and then it just kind of went out after that.
Okay.
Same here.
And it had stopped, and so I was...
Okay, good deal. And how many people are you showing on the line?
Ten.
Okay. But board members, we have Emma, Mark, and Adrian on.
I'm here.
Yes. Yes, ma'am.
Emma, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. All right, Mr. Chairman, shall we go back to...
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, if you, we had voted on routine matters, did y'all hear that part of it?
Yes.
Okay. We're down to the visiting future directions, the confidential agreements between the Howard College and Travelers Indemnity Company. Did y'all hear that?
I did not.
All right. Shall I just set it up again?
Yeah, please do.
Okay. All right. Need a... A motion from a board member that will approve the confidential settlement agreement between Howard College and Travelers Indemnity Company and giving authorization to the president to sign on behalf of the board.
Maxwell Barr made the motion. Patricia made the second. They voted yay. I voted yay. We have three nays. I need one more. Yay.
Yay.
I'll vote yay as well.
Great. Thank you very much. Motion passes. Okay. The next item on our agenda is Student Information System Confidential Agreement.
All right. Again, need a motion from a board member that approves the confidential agreement draft pending final details granting the president authority to finalize.
I'll make a motion. This is Emma.
Thank you, Emma. I have a motion. I have a second. I have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you. All right. The next item on our agenda is the COVID-19 response status number 4.
Okay. All right, board members. And you should have in your... You have in your board book the document that we're going to be looking at here in the I'm having to get back in here. Okay. As you all know, back in March, we started this process of the response to COVID-19. Hard to believe we now are presenting to you the fourth iteration of the response status. We agreed when you gave authority for us to work in altered operations during this time. As part of that process, we would be reporting back at each of the monthly meetings to let you know what had happened the month before, if there were any kind of expenditures that we took action on, whatever. So we kept moving along, and we appreciate the ability to do that. As you also know, what we have done with the document only the things that you see in your document that are in blue are going to be things that, I don't know if anybody else is watching those, Emma, so you can go ahead and move that, are going to be things that are an update. Otherwise, if it's in black, that means, of course, past tense, and we are only dealing with the information that is in blue. So we won't go through every single thing in this document. But I would like to point out some things as we start. As we have tried to keep you informed in each stage, in stage one was when there was no confirmed cases in the college service area. That didn't last too long until we moved to stage two, which was when we began to have cases in the area. We started in on March 24th. It started down in our San Angelo area. And you can see, if you look back at that, you can see some of the numbers. I think of interest, when we gave our last report, which would have been status number three, Tom Green County had 70, Dawson County had 43, Howard County had 9, Martin County had 3, Concho County had 1, Koch 1, Kimball 1, Menard 0, Slacker 0, Glasscock 1, Erion 1, Sutton 0, and Sterling 0. And you all know that that's our service area. As of July 29th, so that was just last week, Thursday, and as you know, we keep getting numbers every day. Tom Green County is now 1,505. Dawson County is 128. Howard is 132. Martin is 44. Concho is 23. Koch is 35. Kimball is 13. Menard is 16. Slacker is 34. Glasscock is 6. Erion is 7. Sutton is 58. Sterling County is the only one, and actually when you look at the state map, what they put up on the state, the Texas Tribune puts up, and the Texas Department of Health Services puts up, I think there are 3 counties now in the state of Texas that don't have any COVID cases, and Sterling County is one of them. Borden County is also one of them, and then I can't remember the other. So since that time, there has been continued spread, and you can see we've had significant spread in our area. And so that's in 2 months' time, you can see it's a big change. Tom Green again, 7,505. Dawson, 43 to 128. Howard County, 9, now 132. And so those are 3 areas, of course, the Big Spring campus, the San Angelo campus, and the La Mesa campus, and then the other counties that surround us then. Mainly those are the school districts that we're going to be serving in those areas, and those school districts are about to begin their year. So it will be interesting as we move into this next aspect of our opening. When you continue on, see the next blue, we have continued, our response team continues to meet, and we meet as needed, and so that continues to be in blue, also shows the meetings that we've had telephonically for the board, and then we will be having now we have it scheduled, it's going to be Thursday. We'll have another district-wide telephonic meeting. We had one on June the 9th, and we had 180 people participating that day. And this one on Thursday will be to discuss our plan as we move into the next steps as we begin the fall semester. Moving on through, there are lots of decisions being made, multiple decisions that have been made over the last 2 months and will continue to be made, but we have, instructionally, we've looked at multiple mini-semesters within our academic calendar, as well as the fall end date. Some of that we will discuss today. Through the summer, we have continued to finish up some of our CTE and CE courses that we could not complete in the regular spring semester. We did that in the summer, including some of our health professions classes, programs with some of their work. dental hygiene particularly, they could not start their clinicals until July 6th, and they just completed that, and I have some great news to share about that in a moment. The summer two classes started July 1 in an online format, except health professions. We continued to do some face-to-face. We did make the decision to begin fall 20 face-to-face courses in the virtual mode for the Big Spring campus. Had some exceptions for health professions, CTE with some skills development type of effort, and leads, orientation, and courses will be face-to-face. Dual credit, we continue to work with the school districts trying to get those individual arrangements made with the different school districts. And, of course, that varies by the school district because of whatever they're doing with their start dates. As far as in college service department planning of this particular status, we continue to do food and toiletry pantries and keep them available to students by appointment because we continue to have students that are struggling in our area. I'm pleased to report that we had the dental hygiene pinning ceremony in the East Room. It was another Facebook Live type event, and that went off really well, and students were able to segue into the next part of their journey, which is that pinning ceremony, which is a big deal in the health professions programs. Also, in the college service department planning, e-learning has been very busy. E-trainers are developing training programs for faculty that are focused on Blackboard Collaborate, Zoom, virtual group engagement, and Respondus Lockdown. So they're preparing for all the virtual kinds of delivery. We purchased the license for Verbit transcription and caption services, and it integrates with Collaborate. That will work for our deaf students, and so that was something that we wanted to have in place for our SWID campus, and we also purchased the Zoom institutional license, which will enable us to have large numbers of people participating in Zoom events, and we're not going to have to be concerned about any kind of outside interference, which has been in some instances a concern, has not been for us, but the institutional license ensures that it will be institutionally used only. Our registrar and admissions personnel are working on all of the sites to get students enrolled. We are doing some in-person meetings with students as needed, and we still continue to have primary assistance by phone and email, but we do have students that come to campus. The CARES Emergency Relief Fund, as of July 29th, we've had 1,029 applications, and those are awards of $1,000. They've been given to 701 students with 68 applications pending, and I believe that we have about $760,000 that we had for the student side of that the CARES Act grant, and so we've just about expended that. Depends on if these individuals that have submitted their information will be eligible, and so we are nearing the completion of that part of the grant. The other half, the institutional grant, is one that will be used for some of the expenditures that we've already taken in efforts to be prepared for the COVID-19 opening return as we move into the fall semester. And that's talking about staff working on campus. Recruitment outreach marketing. Cindy and group have been very busy. We have new videos made to promote It's Time to Fly and We're Ready concepts. You'll hear us saying comments like, we're ready, are you ready, it's time to fly, and that is the concept to get across to our students that we have been preparing for the fall semester, we're ready, are you ready, let's fly. And so that's what we're getting out in the different videos. Those are posted on social media as well as the website, the YouTube channel. We also have the 2019-2020 Student Awards video, which you'll see in a minute. The new 75th anniversary logo has been launched on billboards on Interstate 20 and in La Mesa. San Angelo billboards are in process. That is an effort, again, to show that we are still moving. We're still, Howard College is moving forward, and we're being as normal as we can be. New student orientation is scheduled for August 4th and 6th. Social distancing and masks will be required. Masks are purchased to give to students. The business office has implemented a way for students to pay online for classes or charges, including continuing ed, outstanding student balances, and daycare fees. As a part of all this, you know that we've been having to submit monthly COVID-19 reports to the Legislative Budget Board, and Brenda, in the meantime, has submitted the third and fourth COVID-19 report. There's one due this week as well, and so we those are things that we're being required to do as we move into the next session. And they're working on refunds and payment logistics, a staggered dorm move-in schedule for fall 2020. As you know, one of the things that we've done is we've staggered our move-in over a month for dorms on the Big Spring campus because of the numbers of students, and we want to ensure that we essentially have some kind of a quarantining effect going on as we move students back into the dorm. Athletics. Seasons have been adjusted based on NJCAA guidelines. Basically, there will not be any seasons in the fall, and we will be able to begin right now the spring semester. We will have the normal. I say normal. Things are backed up a little bit for the basketball season, but baseball and softball will essentially be on schedule. In the fall, as far as practices, those have been set back based on NJCAA guidelines for those different sports. Testing and tutoring. We've got virtual tutoring continuing for all campuses. The testing continues on site in San Angelo, and the TSI is still being taken remotely. Advising. We talked about what's going on with advising. We can handle them virtually. We have them come to campus. Resident halls, I've mentioned this already, but the move-in schedule for the Big Spring campus is staggered. We have an online registration process created and posted. Students will begin moving in August the 14th, and it will be through September the 13th. They have online paperwork there to complete prior to the move-in. Two students per hour per dorm, only two individuals allowed with each student. All individuals will be screened prior to entering the dorm. The move-in is scheduled for August 14th to 16th for the SWID campus. We have smaller numbers on our SWID campus. Our enrollment is down on our SWID campus, and that, I think, reflects what is happening because those students come from literally all over the country. And so we're going to be able to, as far as bringing those students over or in over that weekend, it will work, and we will do that. We do have students coming in a little early for new student orientation, but for the most part, that will be our weekend to begin SWID. All of those students are going to be able to have their own rooms, and so they will be able to have a lot of distance that we all talk about. We do have a quarantine plan that's developed for all dorms in the event that we have to implement that. Great Western Dining, we have arrangements made with Great Western Dining to manage all the health safety guidelines in the cafeteria. HR, we have COVID-19 work accommodation plans in process. Some specialized purchases that have been completed. One of those will actually be something today that you will affirm. something that I authorized, and that's going to be the air purifier system. But the additional hand sanitation stations, we have those in. The thermal cameras, that was something that you had already approved. You see those have been implemented as you came into those who came to the sub today. You would have noticed that we have those thermal cameras, and they will take the temperature of individuals that enter our different buildings, as well as the device will let you know if you don't have on a mask. And so we have those installed across the district. We're fine-tuning those this week, and we have a process of being able to, if there is a high temperature, then we're able to see, to pick up that information and work on addressing that.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yes, ma'am.
So if someone does have a temperature, whenever they handling,
does it alert them? It would tell them, yes. And they first of all, what we're going to have as a part of our Open Howard College, and I'm getting a little ahead, but it's all right. It works right here. We have an Open Howard College plan. And as y'all know, that has been a strategic plan that we've been working on in phases over the last 3 months. We are now moving into phase four of that. And that document is going to be Open Howard College. It will be put on the website, and it will tell students, faculty, staff, we've been practicing. Basically, that's what we've been doing. But it will tell, and students that have been coming on campus, they have been practicing in not exactly the way we're going to be moving, because we now have these thermal cameras to use. As you know, we've been having check-ins on all of our campuses. We've had what we call drive-through screening, and that's been happening. And this is the last week of that. Starting next week, then, we'll be using the thermal cameras. And that relates back to basically what happens is the foundation of the Howard College plan, and it reflects also what the coordinating board, the Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board, has recommended, is individual self-assessment. So everybody, like this summer, we have been telling our employees, all of us, we are to self-assess before we come to campus. We ask ourselves the questions: do you have any signs of COVID-19? And all those symptoms are listed. You're to take your temperature at home. If you have a temperature, then before you even come, you are to call your supervisor. And then we have a process where if a call comes in, then that supervisor then contacts Fabian Serrano, who y'all know Fabian's over safety and security, Rhonda Koenig, who's over HR, and then we begin to work on it as far as what we do with that individual. And so we will continue that process, but if a person does not have symptoms, they've self-assessed, they've done a temperature check, they don't have 100 degree or greater than 100 degree temperature, they can come forward to work unless they have been exposed to a COVID-19. If they've been exposed, then they are required, and there are regulations that require both employees and students to report if they have symptoms, if they've been exposed to COVID-19, or if they have been affirmed to have a COVID-19 designation. Those individuals then are not to come to campus, and again, they call. But let's say you do your self-assessment, you do your thermometer check, you're good. You come to work or to class, and then when you walk in, because you're supposed to secondary assess, because what's happened with the drive-throughs, that secondary assessment. And what we've been doing with that is basically getting ourselves into habit so that we're thinking, we've done our thermometer checks, we know we don't have symptoms, we haven't been around somebody that's confirmed with COVID-19, We have not been COVID-19 confirmed ourselves. Therefore, that allows us to come. Excuse me. And so that secondary check now will be the thermal sanitation stations. And so we will go to those thermal stations, or the thermal stations. We will be checked. And if everybody, that's the whole key to it. Employees, again, we've been practicing. But we're going to talk to our students about this as well. And so they're going to be educated on the process. And so when that student comes in, let's say, or an individual employee, and they have had, all of a sudden they've had a spike in temperature, then that will tell us that we will have a secondary check, and we will know we have a person who has a temperature. And then, Fabian, help me with this. There's the, and Eric's on the phone too, but there's then through the system, through this, we are able to then, we can see who that individual is because we have basically have pictures of that. And then we can find that person and let them know. They will know they have a temperature, but let's say they keep on going in. Well, then we're going to know that we have a problem, and we're going to be searching out for that individual. Am I saying that all right, Fabian? Yeah. And so, but hopefully we'll get everybody in the practice of, you self-assess. For example, the students in the dorms, we have the thermal stations in the dorms. So they're going to know, and probably what will happen is I'm sure they'll probably use that for their first assessment. So they should have asked themselves the questions and all before they leave. And hopefully, again, you know, we should know if there's anybody in a dorm, if they have been exposed or confirmed, then we're going to know about that. And those students will be doing isolating. Isolation is for people, and I know everybody knows this, but these terms are all flying around. Isolation is for individuals who have COVID. Quarantine is for individuals that are staying either basically staying away until they can come back in. And so we have the opportunity to isolate students if we had anybody come down with COVID-19. If we have anybody exposed, we will be quarantining them. And so the process then for those students then when they leave the dorms, assuming everything is good, and they go to class, then it would only be if they just had a recent spike. And so we should be okay. Now, if it's a student from within our communities that are not living in the residence halls, the San Angelo campus, the Big Spring, the La Mesa, the SWID campus as well, because we have some SWID students that live in the community, then that they should be doing that self-assessment at home when they come to campus. If we have an issue, then it should be caught. That's the plan. And so, and then at the thermal sanitation station, also we'll have the hand sanitizers. And so that's another thing that we've been practicing this summer, the employees, when we report, after we do the self-assessment at home, we go through the drive-through, when we get into the buildings, we are to wash our hands or sanitize our hands, and then you clean your workstation either at the end of the day or the beginning of the day. And Fabian and group are prepared. We have the chemical spray bottles that we have across the college district that people can use. It's the right kind of strength to address any kind of COVID-19 concerns, and people are to sanitize at the beginning or the end of the day. And then, and since I'm into this, I'll just keep going. And then when you come to campus then, you should be wearing a mask, because with the governor's order now, if you cannot social distance, which is 6 feet and greater, unless it's a person from your own household, then you should be wearing a mask. And if you are within 6 feet of anyone, then you should be wearing masks. That's why we're all spread out. And so then if you get into a situation like if you're in your office and you're needing to work with somebody and they have to be within your 6 feet, and I'll use Julie and Emma and I, for example, we put on our masks. And so everybody is to handle it that way. We're also encouraging as far as workers, we're trying to, it's not the typical old Howard College way where we're moving around as much as we have in the past. We're trying to stay more stationary. We're trying to use the phone. We're doing a lot of telephonic calls. We're doing Teams, Zoom, that kind of thing, so we can cut down on a lot of being around each other. Now, it's going to be a little harder with our students because, obviously, students like to be around each other, and so we're going to be educating them on what they have to do. Our athletes are going to have a document that they're going to be signing. It's basically a social responsibility form, and they are going to be basically understanding what they have to do because they're a big portion of the individuals in the dorm. Our resident halls as a whole are going to understand their responsibility because they're going to be massing, and we're going to be very careful about what's happening in those dorms. When they come to the cafeteria, we are going to be following the Open Texas guidelines relative to what restaurants can do, and so right now it's 50%. So we're going to be handling the cafeteria that way. People will wear their masks. For example, I'll use myself. I park. I'm going to put my mask on because I don't know who I might run into on my way into the building. And even though you're outside, and although that's going to be a fleeting, you're just going to be walking past people, just out of an abundance of caution, that's what I'm going to do. Then when you're walking down the hallway, when you go to the restroom, if you go to an elevator, you're to have mask on. And they also, the Open Texas says that when you're in the elevator, people should put themselves in each corner of the elevator. So we're going to be trying to model all of that. Our classes are going to be, we're doing as much virtual and online as we can. We are going to be having some face-to-face, which will be a lot of the CTE health professions. They themselves have their own protocols. Dental hygiene has certain things they have to do. Cosmetology has certain things they have to do. And those are even the cosmetology area. They follow the Open Texas what they have for beauty shops and all that. And then we have some additional guidelines that licensing requires for cosmetology. We have certain things we have to follow for Board of Nursing, dental hygiene. So there's all kinds of regulations that go on with health professions. That's instructional protocol. I've talked about residents, dining halls. There's even protocol for going into the into a bookstore. The 6 feet distancing, lines, so many people in the store at a certain, we will follow what the state is telling us as far as the numbers of people that can be in the room. As far as fine arts, don't know that we'll be doing any productions in the fall. Be holding off on that as we await. There are some guidelines out right now as a part of Open Texas. And then as far as like the Coliseum rental of spaces, we will be following state guidelines, local guidelines. The Coliseum is a one of great effort because of the numbers of people that you can get into that. And so right now we're not renting it out, not going to be using it for a while until we see what the state tells us to do. We're working with the local emergency people about how to handle the Coliseum. Notification. If a person, as I've already mentioned, students or employees, students are to, they have a responsibility by regulations to report symptoms, exposures, if they're confirmed themselves. If we have information that we have a confirmed case or an exposed case, then what we do, we do contact tracing ourselves, and we work with the local in Big Spring. We've been working with the emergency people here, and if anyone has been exposed, we let them know, and we go through quarantining. We'll do the same thing. I have done the same thing with students. So we just have a process. It's a pretty complex situation. But more you ever wanted to know. But anyway, that covers two things at once. And it's going to be different. It is going to be different. But that's what we have the additional hand sanitation stations for. They're not just at the thermal hand sanitation stations, but they are in other places around the campuses as well. We have our signage, the air purifier system, and again, you'll affirm that today. We purchase some devices that purify the air in areas that we have more massing, and those will be used like in our dormitories. They will be used like in the subs. They will be used in like the area, the business office where we have students come in and they register and they pay. We'll have the devices there. The training room will have a device. We have those again spread out across the district. I've already talked about the Zoom license. I've already talked about the mask. All right. We continue to respond to national, state, and local actions. Purchasing resources to support students during this altered operation status. As we move into our budget and we're working on the budget, we're taking all these things into account. We'll be talking about our cancellation today on due to a candidate withdrawal. So that's another upcoming decision. CTE course requirements, we continue to work on those. I've already said the budget. We work with donors who are interested in providing support for students, employees that are struggling. We continue to work on our central services positions as we, if in the event any stay-at-home measures are mandated. We've already talked about NJCAA, budget. Okay, our Open Howard College plan, I've been addressing that as I was sharing some of that information, but we're going to have on the website, the strategic plan that I've already mentioned and that we've shared with you all before. Phase four, we're going to be, basically, that will be the Open Howard College plan, and that's going to be on the website. And it will align with the Open Texas efforts. And so we will have that on the website. It will have links to the Open Howard College strategic plan, which has all the resources that we are using for the decisions that we're making. plus the way that it's been phased in the event that anybody wants to read all that stuff. But mainly that document has been for employees as we are designing, determining how we're going to do different aspects of the reopening. We continue, the Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board did put out their recommendations about 10 days ago, but that is a fluid document and it will be revised. In fact, in a conference call we had last Wednesday, they indicated that it was already going to change. That's one of the things that we're having to deal with. The guidelines keep changing, definitions keep changing, so we have to keep up with all that. Our target date for Phase 4 is August 9th, which is this Sunday, and the reason we chose August the 9th is because that is when we have some of our resident assistants, RAs, moving into the dorms. And so we wanted to be ready with that, and then, as I mentioned, next week we will start using we will transition away from our screening stations and our drive-through screening, and we will begin to practice next week as employees how that works, and then we'll start having students then on campus coming the next week. So we're trying to get ready. So that covers, Mr. Chairman, that covers the response status number 4 and the Open Howard College.
All right. Thank you very much. The next item on our agenda is performance measures and outcome, accountability measures, operational indicators, the Board of Trustees mid-year update.
Okay. As you all remember, as a part of your Board of Trustees Institute that Patricia and Mark attended, it was a year ago February, March, and we had planned to go this year, but we had a little change of plans. And so as a part of that, we were going to keep up with what we were doing in the way of planning. We'd give you a mid-year report. And so let's go to the first slide, Emma. This will let you see quickly what we've accomplished since January. You did your first Board of Trustees self-evaluation, and we had planned to go to the March 23rd, 25th BOTI, and that was something that you had requested as a part of that effort. Reservations were made in February. Then March happens, COVID-19, strategic planning response begins. The BOTI was canceled for March 23rd, 25th. We were already actually handling going differently because we had some visitors that were going to be coming to see us from TWC, and we wanted to be ready for them. It was a great opportunity for us, for SWED. April, we moved into emergency status, and so we've had all of our altered operations and then, of course, the things we've already been talking about, our response status. You all decided that what you wanted to do, we were going to try to have a local retreat since we were not able to do the Board of Trustees Institute. I had talked with the Texas Success Center about would they be willing to come to campus, as you all had indicated an interest in, for a local retreat. They were willing, and we were talking about late August or early September. Well, of course, here we are, and we know what's going on. They have continued to cancel things and are doing things mainly virtually as well. So I talked with them again. And we're, as y'all know, we're going to be looking at sometime in the spring. In April, we postponed the election. The faculty pay task force effort that we have been working on for a couple of years, again, because of what was happening with COVID, we delayed that effort until September 30 of this next year. The academic calendar, though, that was something we did work on, and we're able to establish some basic framework in the faculty as far as the faculty contract and how that would work, and so we at least have that started. In May, you had your bond rating report. It did not change. Everything was still in good standing. Your quick facts, you got your COVID response status 2. Your June 8th, you got status 3. You saw the Open Higher College strategic planning, so that's, again, part of your effort. Budget focus, your financial condition report, we got that from the coordinating board. Today, we will be going through the planning session, and we'll look at some of that in a minute. You have had your status 4. What's coming in August on the 17th, budget workshop, and the LAR, maybe legislative appropriation request, the Open Higher College plan, will have that in final form so you can see it. The 31st, finalization of strategic goals, the budget will be a part of that. Your response status 5, September 18th, we're going to have the Success Summit virtually, and you all will be able to participate in that virtually. And then we have for fall 20 and spring things that you had wanted to accomplish. Something that's new you don't know about, board book, is we're going to be, your board book that you use for every board meeting, is they have a new version, so you're going to have some training on that. You had asked about wanting to have some Robert's Rules of Order training, so we're looking at some of that. The Congress that you normally attend, the Association of Community College Trustees, it was going to be the end of September, first part of October. They actually just canceled that about a week ago, and it's going to be virtual. And so that is something later in the, I'll just handle it right now. We will be able to sign you all up for participating in that virtually. And so that's going to be a good way to train during the year. Also keep up with what's happening across the country. The Texas Success Center is going to be putting out, and since they're not being able to have the BOTI and some of the things they normally do, they're going to put together some professional development seminars that you all will be able to participate in. And we're still working toward Cynthia Farrell, who is the individual that's over the Success Center. We're going to be coming up with a plan that will prepare you as we move into a local retreat that we'll have sometime in the spring. The dual credit strategy in light of changing dynamics is something we will continue to work on. The 300 by 300 initiative, already mentioned the planning retreat. Vision and mission substantive review, you will recall that that was something that we were going to start working on again, COVID, that was COVID too, and so we will begin that effort, and we have a plan that is in draft form as far as the process, but we will be getting student input, employee input, community input. Eventually then you will be approving the vision and mission statement. This is putting us basically a year behind in our plan. Normally it's every 3 years. And so we'll be adjusting for that. But we will address that as we move through the next few months. And then we're going to culminate that with a strategic 3-year plan that will build on the vision and mission substantive review and whatever we come up with. Any questions y'all might have about that? Okay, Mr. Chairman? That's what y'all are.
Any comments or questions? Okay, thank you. We'll move on to the next item, which is financial indicator, the quarterly investment report. Brenda, have any questions for Brenda? I'm sure she's willing to answer them. Any questions there? Any notes you want to talk about that are in your book? If there are no comments, then I'll need a motion to approve those. I have a motion. Do I have a second? I have a second. All in favor say aye.
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 Good. That makes a quorum. Thank you very much. Motion passes. Next item on the agenda is student success indicators.
Okay. And this is the award video that we were mentioning during the COVID response, and so let's watch that. All right, Emma. Emma's pulling it up. And those that called in, you can...
It's on GoTo.
Yeah, it's on, yeah, you can see it. Yeah, GoTo.
I would like to congratulate all of you for a successful year. Certainly, this is a year that changed up a little bit in the springtime, and we had to approach it in a different way. But you succeeded and you finished the year. We have some students that we singled out that went a little above and beyond and were those that were recognized as being just outstanding in their leadership and service, and we want to congratulate them today. This is a different way. We would normally have done that through the award convocation, but that is not something we want to give up on. We want to continue to recognize our students for their outstanding achievements, and so congratulations to you as you are being recognized for your special achievements. Again, I would like to congratulate all of the students for an outstanding year. This is one that has certainly shown that you have perseverance and a lot of grit, and we look forward to seeing how you progress in the years ahead.
So that was in lieu of, since we were unable to have our awards convocations for the Big Spring, Lamesa, and SWID campuses, that that was what we put on the website. You might have noticed that we were able to do San Angelo. It just happened this year. We had it in February. We changed it up. Normally it would have been later in the semester, so we were able to get that one accomplished before COVID happened. So, Mr. Chairman, thank you for that.
Ready. The next item on our agenda then is monitoring.
I'm sorry, can I go backwards on the academic teams? Can I do those?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. All right. You'll also notice in your board book, this is something we're also very, very proud of. And the NJCAA released the 2019-2020 Academic Teams of the Year. And we, again, had a great year in the classroom. The Hawk men's basketball team, we had a 3.33 GPA. That's number 5 of 41 in the nation. Baseball, a 3.34 GPA, 34 out of 134 in the nation. Women's basketball, 3.3 GPA, 52 out of 106 in the nation. Softball, 3.23, and that's 122 out of 182 in the nation. So of teams that even got to the academic standing, that is the way that our students progressed. Also, we had, I'm sorry? We had on the first team, which is a 4.0, we had 11 students that made the first team, 3 from women's basketball, 2 from men's basketball, 4 from baseball, and 2 from softball. On the second team, and again, this is nationally, we had 8, those students had a GPA of 3.8 to 3.99. We had 1 from women's basketball. We had 4 from baseball and 3 from softball. Third team, All-Americans, academic, we had 7. This is a GPA of 3.6 to 3.79. We had 1 from women's basketball, 1 from men's basketball, 2 from baseball, and 3 from softball. So, again, very proud of those students as well. Now.
All right, thank you very much. Our next item on the agenda is bid. Steve, I'm going to let you go ahead and go through both of them, if you would, please.
Okay, I will. I'm on my phone. Can everybody? Okay. The first one is from Aris Beyond Air Purifier. It's $70,000. Dr. Sparks already mentioned the 28 filters.
Or maybe just come up here.
Yeah, if you'll come up here, this has a... Sorry.
Well, I couldn't hear me.
So. Okay, all right. Is this better? The first bid is the Aeris Beyond Air Purifier. It's from Alert Services. It was 28 filters that were $2,500 each. It was bought under a buy board contract, so we didn't have to do bids. And the fund source is the district, and it's for $70,000, and we're asking that you affirm it because it has been done. The second one is the simulation lab. It's a visual and management system that's in San Angelo, actually at St. John's Hospital. It's $72,222. There were one, two, three, four, five. There were five bidders. It was evaluated, and it was, again, it was $72,222, and that's a bid.
Yeah, I know. The paid for the San Angelo Health Center.
Yes, it is paid for by a grant.
Thanks, Steve.
You're welcome.
Going to need someone to approve these bids.
So moved.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
I have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye. All right.
One more.
Aye.
Thank you. Motion passed. Thank you very much. Next item on the agenda, handbook catalog changes.
All right. We have several here. We'll go through them quickly. A lot of this is housekeeping relative to retirement, things that we needed to update relative to insurance benefits, retirement programs, and these are things that just are part of the guidelines that we have to, and you see that information in red. Retirement after holiday, these some changes to the handbook that allows employees to be able to retire and not have to work the day following an official college holiday, and they can go ahead and be able to access their retirement. That's something that we've done for it. That's just a college policy, and it's not it's not necessary, and it's not in the best interest of the retiree. And so we're changing that so that they don't have to come back, and they'll be able to go ahead and retire. And that is changed in three different places, so that's why you'll see that in those three sections. It's basically the same thing, exempt, non-exempt faculty. This has to do, policy 9.4, this is with off-site training for adjunct faculty and the way that they will be paid for off-site training. Policy 9.7 basically just addresses what is handled over in that other policy. That's just striking it out in that particular area. This is really informational. In your board book, you'll see the Coliseum rental agreement. As you know, the policies were updated and relative to the Coliseum, and this is, we worked with our attorney, Terry worked with them, and we got our contract updated to reflect policy, so that is that. Mentioned the academic calendar. You had already approved the calendar, and then when we had to make the adjustments relative to the start of the semester, we moved it up a week, and then we have it ending before Thanksgiving. And that was in an effort to not have students having to travel away, come back, having the same issues that we're going to be dealing with this summer, being concerned about travel and assuming that we're still dealing with COVID-19 at that point in time, which likely we will be. That was part of the reason that we changed that. And so that is addressed in that. And then we move into academic information relative to the LEADS program. There, you see some changes there. the CNA relative to fees. You see that information. Sign language, again, just some changes in some courses. Business, the certificate level 2, change in those, some of the requirements, and these are all driven by faculty review. Cosmetology, same thing, what's in yellow there. That's all addressed. Amy, anything? Where are you? Anything else that you would say about any of that?
No, unless you have any questions, it's pretty straightforward. A lot of procedural cleanup and cosmetology program, just to mention that, because that's in result of the hours or reducing that clock hour program, we had to adjust our courses. And the last thing is a new business, school business certificate. This actually is it's in partnership with Region 15, is our financial service center in that area, and this is a certificate that's designed to train school work, OAs and different workers at the school to get them more skills so they can get higher paying jobs in the school district. So we're excited, and it's mostly completely online actually, and so we're anxious to see that roll out.
Hey, thank you, Amy. Any comments, questions? Need a motion to approve these changes. I have a motion. Do I have a second? I have a second. All in favor say aye.
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 Sounds like a quorum to me, so the motion passes. Thank you very much. Next item on the agenda is Emergency Medical Services Associate and Applied Science.
Okay. You have that particular... The associate applied science, we're making application for that, and we're required to do that through, this is the process. We already have a certificate program. We're doing an associate of applied science. Anything you'd want to say, Amy, besides that?
The demand has been there for the past year, and Travis Hunter is leading this, our director in financial, so we think this will help get people better jobs, higher levels. It will not start until fall 21.
Sounds like a good program to me. Okay, you need a motion to approve that.
Mm-hmm.
Have a motion, have a second?
Second.
Have a second. All in favor say aye.
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 Thank you very much. Motion is approved. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is Low Producing Degree Programs of American Sign Language.
All right. We have certain requirements for programs as far as they have to have a certain number of graduates every 3 years, 5 years, and one of our programs is on the low producing list, and that's the American Sign Language program at SWID. It's not unusual for us to have programs from our SWID campus end up on the list because we have small numbers, and generally we're able to work with the coordinating board, and they understand we have small numbers of students on the SWID campus. But this was sent to us, and we wanted you to be aware of it. Amy, anything else you can add? Okay. Yep.
All right, thank you.
Informational.
Okay, our next item on the agenda is Dean and Directors, Exempt and Staff Recommendations.
All right, you have your list. You approved faculty back in April. This is the list of Deans and Directors for the next year, as well as the professional staff, and we've listed all those individuals for you, and you'll notice that in some instances, if a person has a star by their name, they basically are a faculty member with administrative duties, so it's not a full-time administrative position, but they have administrative responsibility as a lead or something, and so we distinguish that on the list for you.
Do you... Someone wish to approve this? Need a motion?
So moved.
Have a motion and a second? I have a second. All in favor say aye.
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 One more.
Emma.
It means aye.
All right. Thank you very much. Motion approved. Thank you very much. Okay, next item on the agenda, tax assessor collector fee budget.
Okay, as you all know, Howard College, as well as the other taxing entities, have a proportionate part of the budget for the tax assessor collector, and this is the collection fee budget for 2020, and they have it broken down by taxing entity. It's based on levy and parcels, and then our proportionate part of the budget. Which is the $40,589 of the $204,000 budget. We need your approval for that.
I have a motion approved. I have a second. I have a second. All in favor say aye.
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 Motion approved. Thank you very much. Next item on the agenda is the budget, Howard County Appraisal District.
All right. As you know, the taxing process starts with the appraisal of properties in Howard County. And so basically the appraisal district provides the tax-based information for the taxing entities. The entities then make the decisions on what they're going to tax and then or levy. And then the assessor collector is the one that collects the taxes. And so that budget was just approved, the tax assessor. This then is the budget. Once again, the taxing entities, there's several that are a part of the appraisal district's funding source. And they put together, appraisal district also puts together a budget. And so this is their letter information relative to their budget. It is a 16.65% decrease over prior budget, and it's right at $1 million. They in a two-part document there. That is the cover letter, and then the budget itself. Then they broke it down, and you can see the different information in there relative to how it's how they intend to use their monies, and then Howard College, then our 21 budget amount is $129,360. Of their $1 million budget. We need your approval of that.
Okay, not in red. Okay. Do I have a motion to approve this budget?
Motion.
Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Thank you. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much. All right.
All right. In addition to that, Mr. Chairman, we have excess fund reports that the appraisal district did share with us. And they, in the document that is a part of your board book, you will see that they had excess funds from 2019 in the amount of $212,316, and the Howard College's pro rata share of that was $28,000. So they divided that out depending on the percentage of each taxing entity, and so we got $28,000 on that. That was okay. Oh, sorry. I opened the wrong thing. Go back to that. Okay. And then the 2018 was $101,000, and our proportionate part was $11,978. So that's informational, so you will know that they return that. Those are excess funds. Mr. Chairman, if you want me to keep going?
Yes, ma'am. I can take it, President.
Okay. The reappraisal part, as far as the plan, on an annual basis, they are also to report what their reappraisal plan will be for the for the next year. And this is their plan as they outline. And so basically, they will inspect designated areas of the county in 2021 will be Big Spring ISD, that area, and appraise all new construction or additions throughout the district. In 2022, they will inspect Fort Sand, Sands, and Borden County ISDs. And, of course, Sands and Borden County are not a part of Howard County as far as our tax base. But the appraisal district has several of the entities around the area that they have responsibility for. And that, again, they work with those counties, school districts. So that's what their plan is during 2022. And then that's, again, to let you know what their plans are for the next 2 years.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, President's report, activities.
Okay. I'll keep running. I'll try to run us through here real quick. You have your calendar for the next few weeks, and we'll talk about some of that as we move into the legislative appropriation request. I'll bring up a couple of things relative to your calendar, but basically you have your meeting today. Those of you who are participating or who are members of the Howard College San Angelo Foundation, you have a Zoom board meeting on Wednesday. And then depending on, and we'll talk about the LAR in just a minute, your budget workshop will be on the 17th or the 20th of August. Again, we'll see what your preferences are. Excuse me. And then in the event that you decided that you wanted to levy additional taxes, you have to have one hearing this year as opposed to two. And that's new law. And so those dates would either be the 24th or the 27th, depending on what you decide about your workshop. Your final board meeting in the month of August is the 31st. That is when you approve the budget, set the tax rate, and that completes your budget process that's been going on for the last few months. And we tentatively have the San Angelo Foundation meeting again on September the 16th. That's unlikely because of the fact that this one had been delayed. The one that happened, that was to happen in June, was delayed until August. And again, everything, just all the COVID-19 cancellations, postponements, and all that continues to play out. But we do have it on your calendar. And then I had already mentioned about the Virtual Success Summit, which is on September 18th. So that gives you an idea of your calendar in the next few weeks. There are some thank yous from some individuals that you probably have had a chance to read. Need to keep on going, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, please do.
Okay. So then when we get down to Board Education and Development, Legislative and General Updates, the Legislative Appropriation Request Update. As you know, the LAR, as we move into the legislative session that will begin in January of 2021, the community colleges as well as other universities, state agencies submit a legislative appropriation request. Normally, we will have had the instructions from the Legislative Budget Board sometime in July. And we normally would be at this meeting. Many times we have brought the legislative appropriation request that we have submitted for Howard College and SWID. However, unless Brenda has seen something this morning, we still do not have instructions. Again, it's all part, everybody, you know, everything has been canceled, postponed. And so we're in a situation where we still are waiting for our information relative to the legislative appropriation request. Normally, when we get that from the LBB, they give us about a two-week turnaround. The fact that we don't have that yet, and we don't know if we're going to have a two-week turnaround or if they're going to give us a little more time because of what's going on, we don't know. So that's one of the reasons that I threw out, as far as our budget work and the tax calendars, in the event that you don't know what you will choose to do about taxing, but we need to ask if you have the ability to meet on the 17th or the 20th, not knowing what might happen, because if we get an LBB email today that tells us we have a two-week turnaround, we're going to be spending trying to get that thing done in the middle of getting budget work ready as well. So bottom line, plan A or plan B basically is, can you meet on the 17th or can you meet on the 20th? And if both of those, unless someone has a problem with either one of those dates, if you will just give us the opportunity then to just keep waiting to see what's going to happen, as soon as we know, we'll let you know. But if you would just put those dates on your calendar, unless there is a reason that that would not work for someone. Hearing none, then we'll keep you apprised as soon as we get information. We're really shocked. Brenda and I have kept thinking we're going to receive that any day. We do tomorrow. We have a TAC, a Texas Association of Community Colleges CEO and CFO call, and so it's possible they may have some information that they'll be able to share that they've picked up at the state level. And we may know more tomorrow. But I suspect everyone is just behind, and I think it also probably relates to the next part. The Texas Comptroller Biennial Estimate, as you know, the Comptroller put out the estimate in July, and everybody had been waiting on that with bated breath, not knowing for sure what was going to happen with the revenue for the state of Texas. And we, as community colleges, were very fortunate that we were not asked to reduce our budgets, if you'll recall. The universities were, state agencies had to go back in, and they had to reduce their budgets by 5%, but the community colleges were excluded, as well as the health institutions. So that was great news. We were concerned that when the comptroller came out with the estimate in July, because that all happened like in May, we were concerned that when he came out in July that there could be some kind of change that could impact the community colleges. It does not appear that we're going to have that problem, that challenge, even though the state, as far as we're 4.5 billion projected shortfall for this fiscal year. They believe that it's the year they're going to be able to, with the things that they have with the rainy day fund and some things that they're going to be able to do with other revenue sources. We believe everything's fine for this fiscal year, which again September 1 to August 31st of next year. However, in some of those calls and meetings, no surprise, going into the 2021 session, there is concern that about the next session, what we're going to see, and going into the next. Sorry, trying to get back into where I need to be. Going into the legislative session, that there is going to be challenge. And that could relate to why we don't have the LAR instructions yet, because they may be trying to decide what they're going to ask the entities to reduce by what amount. And so that's what we're very anxiously awaiting to see what that will be, because then that will be what Brenda and I will work on, and others, as far as what we submit for the next session for the, well, going into the session for the next biennium. And so it's going to be driven by some of that. The comptroller has made it very clear. Everything is so fluid right now. Totally depends on what's going to happen, the economy, what's happening with reopening, what's happening with oil. And we know that there has been a little bit of restoration of oil prices in the area. But how it's going to look when we go into January, we don't know. The comptroller will give the legislature before we go in, or before they go into active session, he will give them the estimate that they will have to work on for the budget. What will also be happening in the fall, they will be putting the budget together based on all these LARs that come in from all the different entities. They'll start off with then the budget in January based on his estimate. At the end of the spring, May, right at the very end, he'll give a revised estimate, and they then will do whatever they need to do. They'll either increase the amount of money that they have to use for the budget, or they will lower it. So everybody's really interested in what the comptroller is going to be telling us in the weeks and months ahead. And that's one of the reasons the governor was so interested, and everyone's been pushing to reopen the economy and get our economic engines moving. Next, you have the 2020 tax rate calculation worksheet. This is the first part of the local process. The tax assessor collector, after the appraisal district, comes up with the certified values, then the tax assessor collector puts together the tax rate calculation worksheet. And so this long document represents the work that she has done to prepare what the tax rates would look like for this next year. In a minute, we're going to be talking about when we move down, just a minute here, let me see something. I missed it. Yeah, I missed it. I got ahead of myself. The values were first. The certification of the values, that would have been the first thing I should have been talking to you about as opposed to the assessor collector. So the values that the appraisal district came back with, the total value was 5.7. The value not in appeal was 5.6. In appeal was around 105 million. And so the total value was the $5.7 billion. Okay, so then, sorry. Then the tax assessor collector takes that information, does then the worksheet, the tax calculation worksheet, and that's the document then that you see that is lengthy. They take that information, they look at what they had last year, their new terms this year, as a result of the last session. In previous sessions, you've heard us, or previous years that we've talked about taxing, we talked about the effective tax rate. In the last legislative session, they changed up some of the terminology. Now, instead of saying, when we say, we don't say effective rate, that's not used anymore. The new term is no new revenue tax rate. Same thing, it's just no new revenue, and that is in an effort to try to be more transparent to the taxpayer, because a lot of people didn't, so what's the effective rate? What does that mean? And so what that means is that the taxing entity will not, there will be no new revenue, that they are using, it's the tax rate that brings in the same amount of money as it did the year before. So now that's called the NNR rate, no new revenue rate. So that's the old effective rate. So now she shows what that was for 2019. And the total rate was right at 21. based on a $5.635 billion tax base. Based on what I just shared with you, as far as our tax base this year, you can tell that's pretty tight. There's not much change. Our tax base is a little greater, not much. I mean, it's really pretty close to what it was the year before. So the no new revenue rate is not that significantly, there's not much difference in the rates. There's still some work being done relative to the INS, the interest in sinking, and so Brenda, I know y'all are still working on that.
I didn't hear
from her this morning, and so we'll come back with that information when we move into the budget workshop, when it's on the 17th or the 20th. But basically, this is letting you see the flow of what is happening right now. There's also another term that is going to be used, and that is the voter approval tax rate. And that is the rate that if you go above that rate, you are subject to an election, roll call, a rollback. And in the past, you had to, a petition had to be circulated for an election. Now it's automatic if you go above your voter approval tax rate. And so that is also a term that will be used, and that will be the date. That amount is also the one that we will be discussing at the budget workshop. So you can, again, these are all calculations, things that are underway right now. The voter approval tax rate for Howard College for 2020 is 0.2277. And something that is going to be interesting, and we'll talk about this more at the budget workshop, but our INS rate is actually going to be higher than last year's INS rate, the interest in sinking rate, which is a rate that brings in, it's basically paying the bond off. It is going to be higher this year than it was last year, and the reason being is that there have been more delinquencies, people as far as people paying, so as far as the money that's come in, we don't have the same amount of money in, and we also had some large properties that were in protest last year, particularly the refinery and the hotels that were not settled until after certification. So that is impacting what the INS rate will look like. And so, again, we'll talk about that more at the budget workshop, but that's kind of a preview. This document has been changed up a little bit, and again, it was as a result of the legislative session. No new revenue rate for M&O is 0.185. All right, so you'll be hearing all about that more in the weeks ahead, but I wanted to give you that kind of that preview of where we are. Okay, planning session. And this is as we move into the budget workshop. We start off with, and you can see it on the screen, or those of you who are calling in, you can see it on your in-board book. We have the first page is always the graph that shows the historical enrollment of Howard College from 1946 to where we are today. And this focus, anything we're planning about, anything we do for the Howard County Junior College District, this is just a reminder. That line represents our students over all those years. And so we are, as a part of the process, as we're planning, we are keeping that line going forward and doing what we can to provide education to those individuals that we have the opportunity to serve. Our vision and mission statement and values that are currently being used, that are the foundation of any planning that we do, are listed there. That's what we'll be doing, a substantive review. As you know, last year, we wanted to do basically a deep dive and look at who are our students, who are they by campus, what's a picture. If we did a snapshot of each campus, what is the typical student on each campus? And interestingly, from year to year, and maybe it shouldn't be a surprise at all, we really did not see any change as far as in our snapshot. Sophia, who is a Hispanic female, she continues to represent the native and dual credit student for the college district and the La Mesa and San Angelo campuses. Jose, the Hispanic male, he represents the native and dual credit student for the SWID campus. And Alice is a white female representing the native and dual credit student for the Big Spring campus. As we move into some of these slides, when we talk about native student population, that does not include any dual credit enrollment. And so we will be looking at enrollment that includes dual credit and enrollment that does not. The big picture, the district, again, it's Sophia, Hispanic female, 22 years old. She's part-time, and she mainly takes face-to-face classes. And you can see the overall district snapshot as far as ethnicity, mode of instruction. You can see we have 62% mainly that are face-to-face. And again, this is for general studies and CTE. For the total student population of 4,379 does not include our continuing ed. This is general studies and CTE student population, and it does include dual credit. When you move to the next slide, we pull out dual credit. You see the enrollment goes to 2,000. So that shows you we have a large number of students that are a part of our college district that are dual credit. When you look at the native student then, Sophia continues to be the picture. She's the snapshot, except she's older. She's 24 years old. She's full-time, and she's mostly face-to-face. So it changes up a little bit, and you can tell then that district is impacted so greatly by the number of dual credit students that we have. In this particular slide, we can begin to show you what the economic disadvantage is of the different student groups. We don't have the information that comes from the school district, so when we pull out the dual credit students, we can look at our native students. And you can see that 50.4% of the college enrollment is economically disadvantaged. You move to the next slide, and you look at dual credit pulled out for the district. Again, Sophia, Hispanic. She's 16 years old, part-time, mostly face-to-face. And again, that gives you a little more of the breakdown as far as male, female, mode of instruction. But that is the snapshot of the dual credit student district-wide. Then we go to La Mesa. And I failed to say when we were looking at that first slide, what we're seeing is really should not be a surprise. We are a Hispanic-serving institution. That's the reason we've been designated as an HSI. And so what we're seeing is because, again, it's reflective of our student body. And so when we get to La Mesa and we look at the native student, again, not the dual credit student, you're going to see Sophia on the La Mesa student, or on the La Mesa campus. She's older. She's 25. She's part-time, and she's mostly online because we don't have as many face-to-face classes in La Mesa. Interestingly, and as a challenge, Sophia on the La Mesa campus, 90% economic disadvantage on our La Mesa campus. So that tells us the challenge for those students. You pull out and you look at dual credit La Mesa only, Sophia, 16, part-time, mostly online. We don't know the disadvantage there. Probably would reflect the same for those students. You move to our San Angelo campus. Sophia, she's 25. She's full-time. She's mostly face-to-face. The economic disadvantage on our San Angelo campus is 52%. Again, a little more of the breakdown, ethnicity, and you can see, you know, I could go on and on with this, but I'm sure you've had a chance to look at it, and you can look at it some more. Dual credit for San Angelo, Sophia, part-time, mostly face-to-face. And again, some of the ethnic breakdown overall on the campus. When you get to our SWID campus, and we did not pull out dual credit because we don't have a strong dual credit delivery for our SWID students, which that is something we continue to work on. But you see that our basic snapshot of the SWID campus is Jose, a male, and 22, full-time, mostly face-to-face. The economic disadvantage on our SWID campus is 70%. So you see that we have our students are challenged with their economics on the SWID campus. The Big Spring campus is a different snapshot for both the native and the dual-credit student. In Big Spring, the student is Alice, white female, 23 years old, full-time, mostly face-to-face. The disadvantage is 45% for the Big Spring campus. And you can see that it's pretty close. The Hispanic and white breakdown is really pretty close, 40% Hispanic, white, 43%, so it's very close. Our dual credit student on the Big Spring campus, Alice, 16, part-time, mostly online. And again, a significantly higher number of students that are white in the dual credit as far as the students that are coming through. Continuing ed, then, we move to that. And the continuing ed numbers are going to reflect our prisons, as well as the other continuing ed work that we do. As a district, the average age is 39, and ethnicity is just pretty close. Hispanic, 43, white, 43, black, 6%. So this, again, represents all of the college district continuing ed. We begin to split it up, and we look at Big Spring, San Angelo, and then the prisons. If you look at Big Spring continuing ed only, the average age is 35 and tends to be white. We don't have a male-female breakdown. When you look at Big Spring Correctional, the age goes up to 43, and Big Spring Correctional is 99% Hispanic. When you move to the FCI, Federal Correctional Institution, 42.8, almost 43 is the average age, and 53% of those students are Hispanic. These numbers are not counted in our HSI status. They don't bring in CE, but that gives you an idea with those. If you move to San Angelo, you're going to see that we have the average age is about 38, and 57% of those students are white. Okay, so that's who we serve. So as we are doing our planning, we always start off with, as we move into the budget workshop and we're setting our goals for the next year, bottom line is, this is all about our students. And so who are they? And what are we doing to meet their needs? And so one of the things that we ask ourselves after, so who do we serve? Then we ask ourselves, so how are they doing? Because that should then guide us in decisions we're making. And so we look at ourselves as compared to a peer group, and this is put together by the coordinating board, and with what rating structure being best and 9 being worst. So as you look at key performance indicators, you can see then how our students, how they're doing in developmental, how they're doing in gateway courses, and you can see that our students they're hovering basically in developmental, they're kind of right in the middle as far as their success. As far as our success, as far as how they have improved, you can see how the percentage of underprepared students in 2013 as compared to 2016, so we're and how they're doing as far as satisfying their TSI obligation in 2 years, you can see that we've made strides in that, significant. But we do have this peer group ranking just to see, we're comparing ourselves to others just to see how we're doing. Success in gateway courses. And the developmental is very important, and I've got Brian Stokes in the room. Brian is our institutional researcher and institutional effectiveness person, and he deals in looking at all this information all the time and spends a lot of time dissecting what is happening with our students and how they're succeeding or not, and then we're trying to build from that as far as what we're going to do to address it. And we know that developmental courses are very important as far as students, and going back to with some of the students that you see as far as who we serve, not always, but in some instance, a lot of times, economically disadvantaged students sometimes have greater challenge with education, not always, but because of the challenges that they may be having, that can sometimes present success for them. Not that they're not capable, it's just that they have barriers that get in their way. And so those developmental courses are very important. Gateway courses are very important. Those gateway courses, and those are so important. Those are the courses that students, if you can get them, if they can pass math, reading, or writing early in their college experience, then you can keep them moving on to success. And you can see that we're kind of, again, somewhere, our writing peer group, we went down. Mathematics, we came up. Reading, we went down, but we're toward the top as far as reading, as far as this particular, this cohort of students. But overall, you can see that there's progress being made. Persistence, our persistence rate is low, and so that is something we continue to work on. Gainful employment, our students are getting jobs as far as being able to finding a job after within 1 year after earning their degree or certificate. That is something that we're making progress on. Transfer to university, we tend to have good transfer, changed a little bit as far as this peer group. Graduation, numbers of degrees and certificates kind of in the middle of that. Something that I think that we can be very proud of as far as degrees and certificates awarded to economically disadvantaged students, we have them coming in, but as far as being able to get them to the finish line and get the degrees and certificates awarded to them, we are at the top of that group, And so we are getting them there. Graduation in 150% of normal time, that's in three-year graduation rates. We're about 7 of 7. That's not, you know, where we want to be. Semester credit hours, this is the number of credit hours to complete an associate degree. We're trying to get down to around 60, 64. Amy talked earlier about what we were doing with the cosmetology degree, associate degree. That's a prime example. We're trying to work on all of our different degrees, make sure we get anything out that doesn't need to be in that degree, so that we can get students completed and they're not having to take credit hours that they don't need to take. So that is something we've improved in that particular area. Success points overall, we have, as far as the numbers of success points, we have the most of our peer group. Students receiving Pell Grants, we are about in the middle of that group. So what are we going to do with what we're seeing? Improvement strategies. We continue our work on guided pathways. We have all the different aspects of that that we're working on. Leads, they're doing some great work. Guided pathways and leads, they're doing. Have to give credit to Brian and Cindy and group. They are working diligently to make sure that those experiences in leads are going to help them get a successful outcome in their educational pathway. The guided pathways, we're trying again to make sure that we're removing barriers so that we can get students on a path and to complete their path. And we continue to work with ways to do that. There's a lot of information there. We're developing key leading indicators, something that Brian's going to be working on. By the time we get to the meeting on the 31st, we're going to have some, we're going to focus in on a few key leading indicators that we want to monitor. That is going to help us see if we are, if our students are moving forward. And we're also working on workforce training as far as short-term courses and programs that can help students get successful employment in a very short period of time. So those are the kinds of things that we're working on relative to building a plan in the budget. And as we're finalizing the budget and we bring the budget to you on the 17th, we're going to, in some instances, some of the things that we're planning to do, they won't cost any money. And it'll be part of what we do. There could be some things that we include. In fact, there are some things that are already in the budget, or we've already been doing as a part of our COVID response that will help us with some of the things that we will do going forward. But we will continue to build the budget to reflect the things that we need to do for our students. Finally then, as far as strategic priorities, I can tell you from the institutional side, but from the employee side, our strategic priorities, number one, is to get through COVID-19, to get through this, that is going to be, without a doubt, that's going to be a big priority. And I think you probably saw, you know, there's going to be a lot of effort. It's going to be an interesting fall semester, and we'll see what the spring semester, but that's going to be a strategic priority that's going to be built into our planning as we finalize the budget that we'll be bringing forward to you to look at. We will also, again, be bringing in some of these improvement strategies. Do you have, as board members, is there anything different than those things that I'm bringing up that you would like for us to focus on?
Yeah.
And I think
Okay.
I think we'd get through what you've been talking about would be good, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, everything has just a lot of just like your calendars, the mid-year, everything, we keep saying the word, it's been COVID, but everything we've had postpone, cancel, reschedule, reframe, and so we're going to, that's going to be, we're going to be, we don't like to always be in response. We like to try to be ahead of the game, but we're at a time right now that you find yourself in response a lot.
Yeah, it's changed a lot. Cool, it has.
Oh, it
changed
has.
And, takes you a lot of time to deal with that. You need to be dealing with things.
Exactly.
That's slower.
It has. Yeah, it changes. It changes your focus. For sure.
It's all data driven, and I think that's great. You're not just shooting an arrow and hoping that it lands on the right kid. That it's all, or students, I shouldn't say students. All data driven.
Okay. Any board members on the line have anything they'd want to say?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Amy, Brian, anything y'all would want to add to what I said?
I think it's a lot of planning we started, and we have about to have work groups get after this and hit. So I know.
Yeah, that was back in March.
That was back in March, and of course they delayed our pathways into institutes where we travel to. Two of them there.
Two.
And we did have a virtual 2-hour meeting the other day. It was very helpful. Kind of started thinking again on how we can do some things. But it's just frustrating that we start things and have not been able to.
I'm sure just mechanically talking to each other.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of effort.
I still think we're going to see a lot of success from the LEAD program. The more we get into it, I think the more success we're going to see out of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we think so too. We think that we're going to, as time goes on, we're going to continue to see results with that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well then we will continue down the path that we are. And Ms. Chairman, you want to keep on going to, or next we've got the, I guess you could get back in on this part, acceptance of the at-large trustee resignation.
Yeah. That's our next item on the agenda is accepting Emma Trabiel's resignation. She's moving in on to Loretta to, assume, a much better job or a more prestigious job, whatever. So I need a letter. I need a motion to accept Irma's resignation. I have a motion. I have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Was that two ayes there?
Yeah. Emma?
She just had to.
She had to get off. She's gone then. Okay. All right.
Okay. Motion accepted. So Emma is now resigned. Need to go to a election update.
All right. And so, Mr. Chairman, as a part of, and board members, as a part of Emma's resignation, then she had to withdraw from the election because obviously she's not going to be in Howard County, and you have to be able to, you have to be a resident of Howard County. So she has withdrawn. As a result then of that, there are three at-large positions that were on were to be elected in May, and we had four individuals file for those three spots. Then, with your postponing from May to November, then we have inquired with the Secretary of State what do we do? Because we knew that as far as filing, all the filing was basically frozen. And basically it was kind of our understanding that you just took the election and you moved it to November. But they told us, no, because of this scenario, what you will do then, we thought we were going to have an election, period. But they said, no, you can still cancel the election. And so had this happened back in the spring, then you would have had the document, the certificate of unopposed candidates, and then you would have had an order of cancellation because you would have had three individuals for three spots. So, Mr. Chairman, those need to be approved.
All righty. Hope everyone got that. Do I have a motion to approve those? Okay. Have a motion to have a second. Have a second. All in favor say aye.
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 All right, great. Thank you. Motion passes. I guess we're down to number five, trustee vacancy at large replacement option.
Yes, sir.
Holdover documents.
They did both.
They did both.
Both of that. Okay. So then, after you have this kind of scenario, then also visiting with Secretary of State, so what's the scenario? What happens then? All right, so you either have, when a candidate withdraws until there is an appointment, then you, that person who has left the role, is they are in what is called holdover doctrine in this, unless there is an appointment. And so so basically what that means is that Emma would, unless there's an appointment, she would have to continue, she would have the responsibility of the job, even though she was in Laredo, Texas. And so that's the way that works, holdover. So you either wait to the election. Well, and let me explain that. There's not an election, but what it boils down to is that November 3rd, Ben is the person who he would not be able to have the responsibility of the position until November, until the November 3rd election is the way that works, and until he took oath at that point. So if there's not an appointment, then Emma has to do holdover. If there's an appointment, then the individual can start serving. So that is the process that you find yourself in. Okay?
Well, I think it's my personal opinion is that we need to appoint Ben Zajcik as a trustee to replace Emma, because he's going to be on the board anyway, so why not go ahead and get him on the board ahead of time and solve a lot of problems for Emma, having to go a long distance and also hurt Ben's feelings. We don't want to hurt Ben's feelings. So it'd be my recommendation to appoint Ben Zajcik as our next board member to replace Emma.
And what that means then, Ben would serve the last 3 months of that term, but he would take an oath of office today to do that. Then come November, Ben and Patricia and John will take oath again. So that's basically what happens.
Okay.
Okay?
Yep.
So there's got to be a motion to, and a second. And
okay. I have a motion to approve Ben Zajcik as our new trustee.
I'll move
that. Have a motion. Do I have a second?
I'll second it.
I have a second. All in favor say aye.
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 All right. Motion carries. Welcome, Ben.
Yes. And Emma could not have voted anyway because you can't vote on your replacement.
Okay.
So that works out. All right. So anticipating that you would do that, then Ben needs to sign a statement of officer form.
read this and sign. And what that is, the board wears the medallions at graduation ceremonies and special ceremonies like this.
Okay. And then this will be the oath you're going to take, and you will sign right here. Your right hand. I state your name.
I, Ben Zeichert.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will faithfully execute the duties.
That I will faithfully execute the duties.
Of the office of trustee
of
for the Howard.
Oh. Of the office of trustee.
For the Howard County Junior College District.
The Howard County Junior College District.
Of the state of Texas.
Of the state of Texas.
And will to the best of my ability.
And will to the best of my ability.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
The Constitution.
The Constitution.
And the laws of the United States.
And the laws of the United States.
And of this state.
And of this state.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Okay.
Very good.
Congratulations. And actually, so Ben... We need to allow Ben to, because he should be, Ben, pull your chair. But we just need to give you a 6 feet distance.
I'll tell you why.
You can just sit right there.
I'll sit right here.
That'll work. Okay. All right.
Okay. Foundation appointments, I believe, is next.
Yes, sir. So as a part of the board structure, you also have your different members on the different foundations, and Chair John, you have recommendations on how you want to do that?
It's not showing up on my deal.
Okay. It's Max and Mark on the Howard College, the Big Spring Foundation, Patricia and Adrian on the San Angelo Foundation, and Michael and Ben on the SWID Foundation.
Okay. All right.
So you'll need...
Oh, we need to approve that also. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Okay. So I have need a motion to approve those appointments for those foundations. I have a motion to have a second?
Second.
I have a second. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. All right, next item is trustee appointment training.
All right, and Mr. Zajcik, since you are now on the board, you get to start all your training. And so, I warned you. And so, Public Funds Investment Act, that is something, and Julie brought information today, before you are able to vote on anything relative to budget, you have to complete that training. And so that's something that you'll need to do over the next couple of weeks if you can before the budget workshop. The Open Meetings Act, that's an online training. You have 90 days to do that. The Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board new trustee training, you actually have a year for that. But if you go ahead, you can go ahead and do an online training now. I'm not sure that they'll do the face-to-face one in November. You have the option of doing it either in person or doing an online. Generally, the board members have decided to do it online. We have found out you can go ahead and do that now if you want to and use the one that they have this year. And then there's also cybersecurity awareness. You'll need to do that. It's another online.
I've done that for the Secretary of State.
Okay. All right, good. And so those are trainings that you need to complete. And then what we will do, we will keep those on the agenda as a reminder until you're able to, it's not to out you, but it's to make sure that we don't forget so that we're getting your trainings taken care of because we have to make it as a part of the record. And so we will do that as you check those off the box. We'll put it in the record, okay? So we'll get that information to you. Okay, and then finally, Mr. Chairman, I've already mentioned it, the ACCT Congress that has gone virtual and what we will do and how we will plan to register all of you. The price has been reduced significantly, and we can use the sessions at different times whenever needed. So we'll go ahead and proceed with that.
Okay.
So that's it.
All right. You've already gone through valuations and futures in items, so I would make a motion we adjourn. Thank you, Law, for showing up, everybody. Appreciate you very much.
Thank y'all.
Thank you. We'll see you guys later.
All right. Thank y'all so much.
Thank you.
I promise you that it's normally not this bad. And you too, Ben.